Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again Chris Taylor. He's the president and CEO of Great Bear Resources. Chris is a structural geologist and a fairly young man who's having a lot of success early in his career, and we're just really excited to have him with us again to talk about Great Bear Resources, which is a sponsor of this show. It's also a company that I have recommended to my subscribers and also own shares myself, which I've purchased off the market because I find this such an exciting story. Great Bear trades in Toronto under the symbol GBR. You can buy it in the U.S., as I have, under the symbol GTBDF. 36.2 million shares outstanding. Earlier today, when I checked, it was selling at around $2.75 in U.S. money, giving it a market cap of a little under, just a whisker under, $100 million in U.S. funds. So, Chris, thanks for joining me again.
Thanks very much, Jay. It's great to be on the show again.
It's great to have you, and I guess you're at the BMO, the BMO conference, as it's called, in Florida. How are things down there at the conference?
Well, I have to tell you, it's some of the most exciting presentations I saw back-to-back yesterday morning, when it was Newmont and then Barrick speaking to each other. We didn't see any actual fisticuffs occur, but it could have come to that point.
Yeah, I would think so. A hostile move on Barrick's part to try to grab Newmont. I honestly hope it doesn't happen because companies that are exploring and developing projects, I like to see as many potential suitors out there for those smaller companies as possible. But in any event, you have a very exciting story. Now, I received an email from Dr. John Mark Stoudy, who I'm sure you probably know. He's an exploration geologist as well. He sent me a comment and a question that he thought I should pass on to you. John Mark stated, and this would be directed to you, Chris, he said, excellent work by you and Bob Singh on the structural geology and the hinge zone. Why do you think that you found this when others had not? And in the coming 2 years, where do you see the company progressing? If you want to take the first question first, and maybe we can get into where you see the longer term over the next 2 years where the company's going. But why were you able to find this? You know, one of the things that really impressed me, Chris, and why I got excited about your story early on, and when Gwen Preston introduced you up at the Metals Investor Forum in Vancouver last year sometime, I believe it was, early in the year perhaps, was that almost every drill hole you put down, if not every drill hole, was hitting mineralization, hitting the structure that you intended to hit. So I guess I would like to just, again, pass along the question, why do you think you were able to find this this structure, this rich gold-bearing structure, and others were not?
Well, that's a great question. I guess it's really what did we do differently? And then we can go into the metrics long-term. So effectively, when we took on the project, we benefited from having over 150 drill holes in it already. So that was over over a couple kilometers of area, and a lot of it concentrated in one place. Now, the technology changes over time, right? So back in the early days when this was discovered in the 1980s, the thing that makes our project sort of stand apart from some of the other major gold discoveries in that Red Lake district, it is one of the best mining districts in Canada, but our project doesn't have a lot of bedrock exposure. There's a few feet to sometimes a couple tens of feet of sand and gravel that covers the bedrock. So you just don't see it on surface. You can walk around there all day and you'll see trees, or where there used to be trees, it's all been logged. And you won't really see much in the way of bedrock geology. So people were effectively drilling off of geophysics in a really magnetic group of rocks. And what that means is that a lot of the historical drill holes were just sort of in the wrong place. And when we took on the project, we could see that out of those 150 holes, the majority of them had gold in them, which is really unusual over such a big area. But because there was mistakes in where the holes were supposed to be, it didn't look like it had sort of the excellent continuity and the high-grade gold continuity that we see now. So basically, we fixed up old data, we used modern technology, and we used our experience with structural geology, geochemistry, and some of the crew that we have who are they've been working in the Red Lake area for a long time to be able to predict where these high-grade zones would be. And lo and behold, drilling off of that reinterpretation, we were and continue to be very successful.
Yeah, you just—I mean, it's just amazingly almost every, as I say, almost every drill hole that you put down hit gold mineralization. It's just the last time I heard of such consistency was with Briex, and I said, I don't think this is a Briex. Thankfully, it's not. Now, Chris, your grades have been phenomenal. I mean, this is what's got me and everybody so excited. For example, you have had insane grades like 50 ounces per ton over smaller intersections, and that has brought a lot of attention to your stock. But what really matters from an economic perspective is consistency and continuity of grade over sizable structures. Can you comment on that issue and perhaps also give us an idea of the true widths of the gold-hosted structures that you're encountering?
For sure, Jay. What we're seeing is effectively some of the main types of structural geology that control where the big mines in the area are located. Those big structures we also see on our project. So when we got involved, that was not generally known, that we had these big structural features, these big folds and these big faults that are so important to basically provide the interpreted plumbing for what brings the gold from deep in the crust and puts it where we're seeing it today, right near the surface. So we began to find that we had these big features, and we began to think big. You know, when you take on a project, you're often very conservative when you start doing the work, because obviously, you know, when you, you know, sort of put a new company together, you want to make sure that you're growing investor value and you're being careful about it. And, you know, it's like growing a child in very many ways. So we began stepping out and consistently hitting gold, reinterpreting, and then we began to think, what if this project is more like, say, like Big Mine that Goldcorp operates in the district? Mm-hmm. So effectively, when we switched over our thinking, we began to see that there was large-scale potential, and we began to drill along some of the primary structural trends. And one of those trends is one of the largest deep-seated fault systems in the district. There are basically two of them. One of them looks like it lines up most of the major mines that are in the Red Lake camp, which for those of your listeners that are not terribly familiar with Red Lake, that would be a global resource of over 50 million ounces of gold in known resource, and over 33 million ounces of gold produced. So we began to see that we had these sort of big structural features, and that really explained, because there's only two locations in the district where they're present, why you get so much gold in our project. And that means that it has big scale potential, but also the structural potential for a lot of on-strike continuity. And that's really the explanation for why we keep hitting the gold consistently, is because the area has been very well provided with structural controls and gold-bearing fluids.
Mm-hmm. Chris, I saw in your February 21st news release that you just put out, you noted a 42-meter width wide zone with multiple gold-bearing intercepts, including a 31.6 grams over 3.4 meters. And in that press release, there was also reference to a south limb zone that is continuous with the hinge zone. Is the merger of those two zones what accounts for this? I think this is wider than anything you've seen so far, I think. Am I right about that?
That's correct. Those are mostly nomenclature, so effectively it looks like one big gold-bearing vein system of multiple veins sort of, you know, either coming together or going apart. And the term we use in geology is anastomosing, and effectively that's a technical term for wiggling. So they wiggle their way along a trend, and sometimes mm-hmm. they're wider, sometimes they're narrower, sometimes there's one of them, and sometimes, like in that news release, there's four of them stacked up together. And that really is, for the Red Lake District especially, most of the mining, even if you think about Goldcorp and the main Red Lake gold mine, most of the mining and most of the gold zones that they've mined are between half a meter, 0.5 meters, and 2 meters in width. If you read their technical report, which is on their website, that's the information that they provide in the technical report. So when we begin to see veins that are much you know, larger than that, and vein zones that are up to 40 meters wide, which is 130-odd feet wide, I mean, it shows you the potential scale of what we're dealing with here, and certainly that it's a big, robust gold system.
Chris, also, I believe when Goldcorp first started encountering those really high grades, they were at considerable depth compared to where you're finding gold. Am I right about that?
Absolutely, Jay. I mean, some of that drilling that they did, some of those discoveries are over 1 mile vertically down in the earth. And that that really adds to the operational costs that they have to endure when they're mining it. Yeah, regardless, you know, there was a period of about a decade from the early 2000s to about 2014, where even down at those depths, because of the high Red Lake style grades, the main Red Lake gold mine was probably the most profitable gold mining operation on the planet, even at those depths. But the difference is, with our discovery, is that it basically goes right to surface. So we've been drilling gold off. We know some of the historic areas were even trenched with an excavator. They had high grades going right to surface. So where we're drilling now, from about 0 meters depth to about 300 meters depth, we keep consistently hitting these high-grade bearing quartz vein systems. And that's really exciting, because it takes that discovery potential and brings it right up to surface where, you know, I'd say potentially that would be very good for the project over the long term, kind of economically.
Absolutely. Well, can you give us an idea of what the footprint is so far? What I noticed back in June, you added a little over 2,000 hectares onto your Dixie project. Obviously, you must be seeing something or believing that the current existing structures might extend further. But can you give us an idea of what is the area, the surface area that you've drilled on so far, and how much bigger is the target that you're looking at from surface?
Well, we've drilled across about 2.5 kilometers of strike length so far, and that's been really remarkable, because we've hit gold in every hole. I mean, not every hole is what we'd call a screamer. Some of them are quite, you know, some of them are very, very well mineralized, and some of them go down to, you know, a meter of a gram, and then up to many meters of many ounces. But, you know, 2.5 kilometers drilled strike length on a gold system, it's big. And that parallels that big structural feature that I was telling you about. That big structure on the project is probably about 20 kilometers long. So, you know, while we've had a really good success rate and we found new zones, our project, that Dixie property, is about 10,000 hectares, so about 23 kilometers long by, well, it varies in width, but several kilometers wide, and there are multiple targets on it. So it's a combination of effectively drilling more of the high-grade gold on the zones you've already found, and stepping out and testing new areas that have the same kind of structural controls and look like good potential hosts for mineralization. And some of those early step-outs that we did, they were hitting nice gold way out, you know, 2.5 kilometers away. So, you know, very exciting the way it's coming together.
Boy, absolutely is exciting. I see in your press release you talked about a 30,000-meter drill program that is to last through, I guess, through this year and maybe into 2020. What will be the objective of that? And do you foresee any, are you planning anytime soon a resource?
Effectively, that program would be, it's probably about a $5 million Canadian budget that we have for that. And as you know, Jay, I mean, we currently have about $15 million in our treasury, and a bunch of warrants that are owned by Rob McEwen and management largely that could bring in another $8 million or so. They're all in the money. So, you know, collectively in Canadian dollar terms, that's about $15 million to about $22 million that we have available. So you can see, you know, we'd be able to expand that drill program that we've announced pretty, well, very substantially by multiples without having to go back to the market for more financings. So what we'd like to do with that drilling is effectively twofold. One of them will be testing these new targets across the project. So that's exploration, like pure exploration. And we've had some very nice early successes with that. The other one is effectively definition type drilling and extension along strike and down dip on the zones that we've already found. So that will in future generate a resource. Are we at the resource point yet? No, but we are putting together mineralized volumes of rock very quickly with the hit rate that we have and the consistency that we're seeing. It's been very attractive what's coming into the ground so far. I can get into that in a little bit more detail if you want to hear some of those statistics too.
Yeah, it's I mean, there's a sense that this system could go to great depth, I'm sure, but your focus at this point in time is just laterally pretty much, right? To what, 300 meters or so you say you're drilling to?
Yeah, we've drilled down to about 300 meters in depth, but we know the other local gold mines, the other gold deposits, there's gold down to many kilometers as drilled to date along some of these major structures and major controls. Red Lake is very well known for having great vertical extent. So we would anticipate, and, you know, obviously you need to prove it with drilling, but we would anticipate based on the similarities that we are seeing that we have great depth extent as well. But yeah, in the short term, in order to figure out how big the system is that we're drilling and how many zones there are, it's shallower drilling initially, until we get a handle on that. Right now, the more we step out and the more we drill new areas, the more gold zones we've been finding. So that's a process we'd like to see continue as well.
I can't imagine. You're down at the BMO conference. I can't imagine that there's not a lot of very interested companies down there talking to you, interested in knowing more and probably picking your brain in very technical terms, trying to understand as best they can what this freak of nature, it seems almost, is all about. But let me just ask you then, getting back to John Mark Stoudy's question, where do you see the company going over the next 2 years?
Well, it's a very good question. One of the things we will be doing is constructing a resource, and the drilling that we're putting together is effectively doing that. The more zones we find, the longer it takes to put it together, which is obviously a very nice problem to have. But that will come over the next couple of years once more drilling has been completed. In the meantime, because it's such a new discovery and it's a new company from the public awareness perspective, we'd like to get the word out, like for people to be aware of what Great Bear is, where we're working, and what the Dixie Project is that we're working on. So there's a lot of introductions that have to be made. Word has to be gotten out. And in particular, we've had quite a bit of interest from various large mining type sort of corporate people, and obviously people that do make large investments in mining companies. So these are discussions that we're beginning to have, and it's nice to see the awareness of the company and the potential of the project and the company get distributed a lot more widely. So that's a big changeover from when it was just me and Bob Singh and our board members, and we were working on the first, say, 10-drill full program about a year and a half ago.
Okay. So this is just almost a freak of nature, it seems to me, Chris, that what you have here. Would like to ask you, you have another project, the West Madsen Gold Project, that is in the same area. That project also seems to have some potential, but obviously you have your hands full with Dixie. Do you have any plans for West Madsen?
That's a great question. I mean, we picked up the West Madsen project because it's right adjacent to Pure Gold Mining. They recently came out with a feasibility study on the first sort of million ounces of high-grade gold that they've defined there. So, I mean, I think it's a strong study, and I think it's of interest to people. So what we did was stake up the on-strike extension of some of these structures that we can see or we interpret through the geophysical data that we have collected over the project and that is publicly available on their property. So we basically staked the West Madsen projects to control the on-strike extent of those gold-bearing structures that they're working on. And they're drilling. Pure Gold is drilling about a kilometer and a half from our claim boundary. So it's quite close on what they call their wedge zone. So our plans for Madsen, we'd like to see how it goes with Pure Gold. We hope they're successful and manage to either place it into production, expand the resources, or attract a corporate partner of some kind. So mm-hmm. if that occurs, it's advantageous for us to have the ground that's immediately adjacent to it that potentially could extend what they're working on. So there won't be any near-term drilling by us on West Madsen. As long as there's active work going on by Pure Gold on Madsen, I think that's probably the cheapest exploration that Great Bear can conduct,
yeah.
To be a bit cheeky about it. And we're focusing our attention quite precisely on the Dixie property because of all the gold that we're finding there.
My goodness, I guess so. You'd be foolish not to. But to also have an asset like West Madsen is also a very positive thing, I think. Well, I want to thank you very much, Chris, for being with us. Very exciting story. I hope we can have you back in another few months or so to discuss your latest discoveries. It's fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us.